In the great hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe. Superman. Wonder Woman. Batman. Aquaman. And those three junior super friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. Their mission, to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of For All Mankind, a Super Friends podcast. For All Mankind is a read-through show covering DC Comics' classic Super Friends series, which ran for 47 issues from 1976 to 1981. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly. And joining me this episode in the Hall of Justice is my super friend, Tim Price. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Rob. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for being here. And this is part two of our kind of podcast crossover this month, isn't it?
Yeah, it was really exciting. And we had you on Outcasters to cover Batman the Outsiders number 19. Which was a lot of fun.
Yep.
I was super glad to have you on that show, so because you know you'd want to talk about it for quite a while. I mean, like even before I started the first episode, you said, I want to be on for this episode, for this issue. I want it.
Yep.
It's mine. And it's like, okay, it's yours. So, and I think it was worth the wait.
I think so too. I had a lot of fun, yeah. And I was very patient as we waited all 18 months to get to that episode.
You paid your dues.
But you're here now. You're here on For All Mankind, and I really appreciate it. We're going to be talking about Super Friends number 25. Before we get to that, Tim, I got to ask you, like, what, if any, history do you have with the Super Friends comic?
I don't have much of a history with it. Of course, I watched the cartoon. I was actually probably the right age to watch it from the very first episode. I was probably like 5 or 6 when the first episodes were on the air. So I watched every episode religiously, of course. But the comic book I never really could find. And really my comic book collecting off the stands didn't really kick into gear until kind of like the early 80s. Because I just had this huge swath of old comics that were gifted me by a guy who dumpster dived and pulled them all out of the dime store dumpsters from the people who would, you know, take the top third off the cover to send back to refund. And he just gave me all these when I was like 7. You know, we got all these in this, like a few thousand of these comics, 1,000 really. And much to my parents' chagrin, they were like, why does Tim spend all his time in the basement reading these comic books? What the heck? It's like, so I really didn't have much need to buy new comics. So I hadn't really discovered that part of my fandom yet. But then unfortunately, the flood of 1980 took away those books anyway. But my comic book collecting then kicked into gear. And then it's been a terrible, terrible drain on my resources and finances and space ever since, which has been delightful. But yeah, so I kind of really missed this comic along the way, with one exception. For some reason, and I don't know why, I did happen to get Super Friends number 7 back in the day, which was the issue with the first appearance of Zan and Jaina, as well as the first appearance of the Global Guardians. So I reread that issue like crazy and really just dug it. I just dug it a lot. I can't remember if the timing of that, I guess they appeared in the cartoons before that issue came out. But it was really cool because since that issue kind of was like an origin, an introduction of the twins, it felt like their first appearance, even more so than the TV show. So I really love that and still have fond memories of it to this day, even though that issue, again, is one that, you know, did not survive the test of time.
Newsstand distribution was so wonky, you know? I mean, stuff just showed up or it didn't. Sometimes you didn't get part two of a story, or sometimes you didn't get part one of a story, and there was nothing you could do, you know? You were just like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
So I've heard a couple other guests have said that Super Friends didn't show up much in their area. Now, it always did in mine. So obviously, in New Jersey, Super Friends was a big seller, but that's interesting that in some areas, just didn't really pop up very much.
Right. Well, like by the time I was looking for comics, like I really don't remember ever seeing it on the stands. But like I said, I was by a lot of time when this book was probably at its best or when it was doing its best sales, I probably wasn't looking for comics that like it anyway.
Right.
I just kind of like missed that whole window.
Okay. Well, like I said, I'm very eager to find out what you thought about this issue. As I mentioned, it's number 25. The story is Puppets of the Overlord by E. Nelson Bridwell, Ramona Fraiden, and Bob Smith. It was on sale July 19th, 1979. Now, before I get to the plot synopsis, I want to ask you, Tim, what do you think of this cover? We've got the Overlord, and he's got his marionettes, and they are all the super friends, and he's making them fight one another. And he's saying, ha, I'll control the real super friends as easily as this. And the story says it's Puppets of the Overlord, a fantastic thriller with seven guest stars. So what do you think of this image?
Well, I mean, when you go say got seven guest stars and you already have seven heroes in the story, it's like, man, you're getting your money's worth for this comic.
40 you know, cents.
That's a bargain at half the price, literally. So that's pretty crazy. The Overlord is really, I'm sorry, he's very funny looking.
He's just not imposing.
No. He's got that thin mustache going on and a crown on his head, and there's the globe. The globe of the world makes the top curvature to cover his head on this crown. And he's got like the globe in the symbol on his chest. His outfit is like a what is that? What pink purple is that?
It's magenta. It's very bright magenta.
Thank you, the artist, for telling me for finding words for me. Thank you. That's because I would not have known. I was not going to get there from here. But white gloves, a white cape. So he's not particularly imposing looking. Now I like though his look because it's ridiculous. I kind of dig it because of that. And it's like, I'm not going to take him seriously. This is not a book to take seriously. So, at least in my view. So, I really kind of dig that. The fact that he's using marionettes for these things, like, man, so you couldn't get the puppet master? Oh, that's right. He's Marvel. Never mind.
Damn. But, oh, come on.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But I do think it's fun, the image of the puppet heroes fighting each other. And then there's Jaina in like pieces on the front, just falling apart. It's like, yikes, that's a little intimidating. But
yeah, that's ever so creepy. Disembodied Jaina on the floor. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's a puppet, but it's still slightly upsetting an image because her arm is off and stuff.
Yeah. It literally the strings cut of that character. So it's like, that's a very interesting, it's a little bit of an intimidating image, but it's also like, it's still not by being a marionette. It's like, not like a human figure. It's not invoking anything like body horror. It's just disturbing, but in a way that, you know, kids are going to look at it's like, ooh, what happened? But no, I really kind of dig the cover. I really kind of dig the matchups with the characters they have there. Jan trying to hold his own against Robin. It's like, I'm sorry, Jan. No, Robin's going to get you. I'm sorry. But and really, Aquaman and Batman, well, that's an interesting pairing because with the two of them sharing, you know, lots of Jim Aparo history, and there's other, it feels like those two, I wonder if that's, that I know that's intentional from a matching up, comparably matching up the characters and strengths.
Sure. But, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. But still, there's something visually about having Aquaman and Batman pair up there in the middle that I just dig. I just dig that.
I think in every issue of Brave and the Bold where Aquaman guest starred and teamed up with Batman, they got into a fight. Every single one. They found a reason to get those two beating the crap out of each other. It's always a thing. I think it's a great image. It fills the space. You know, there's no dead space. There's this great uplighting on Overlord. Hard to make him look at all imposing because he looks completely ridiculous. Overall, I mean, it's meant to get kids to part with 40 cents, and I think this accomplishes that.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely agree.
All right. So, all right, let's get to the story. As I mentioned, this is title of it is Puppets of the Overlord. So it starts with the new Overlord sits on his throne plotting against the Super Friends. He dons what he calls a thought induction helmet and aims at puppet duplicates of the Super Friends, which will somehow allow the user to take control of the real versions. At the Hall of Justice, the Wonder Twins are asking the Super Friends if they ever get discouraged. No matter how much they fight injustice, more of it just creeps up. The Super Friends begin to talk about how, yes, sometimes it does get tiring, but the fight for truth and justice must go on. But then suddenly, the Super Friends change their tone. They get angry and start declaring about how they're going to use their powers in more draconian ways and take control of various parts of the world to restore order. Even the Wonder Twins get in on the action, declaring that they will take control over Europe and Asia. What? Batman beams to the Jelly satellite and tells his plan to take over North America to Green Lantern, who is on monitor duty. Green Lantern is naturally aghast, but before he can stop the Dark Knight, Batman uses a knockout gas dyed yellow, and Green Lantern is out. Superman arrives in South America and declares a new Superman empire. A new superhero, Green Flame, arrives to stop him, but she is defeated. Wonder Woman pulls this shtick in Africa and has to battle her Amazonian sister Nubia. Robin does battle in Australia against the Tasmanian Devil, and Aquaman has to square off against his own wife, Mira, and sidekick, Aqualad, after he declares that he will rule all of Atlantis and then conquer the empires of the land. But in the Arabian Peninsula, the Wonder Twins encounter the superhero known as Seraph. When they activate their powers to fight him, they suddenly come to their senses, realizing that they will fall under whatever evil spell they were under before if they revert back to their Exorian forms. The Wonder Twins surmise that maybe the Super Friends can be similarly freed if they revert back to their alter egos. Seraph uses his Ring of Solomon to change Batman to Bruce Wayne, which indeed does the trick. Green Lantern wakes up and says, so as not to reveal the other Super Friends' secret identities to the world, he will beam them all back to the JLA satellite and transform them there. This works for Superman, Wonder Woman, and Robin, leaving the Super Friends to figure out how they're going to do this for Aquaman, who has no alter ego. They also have to figure out how they're going to return to their superheroic roles without turning heel again. Aquaman, with the help of his finny friends, manages to fight off all of the Super Friends and Green Lantern until Wonder Woman sends a telepathic message to Mira, who creates a hard water fist and uses it to clock her husband upside the head, knocking him out. Wonder Woman uses her magic lasso to change Aquaman back to normal. The Super Friends then realize her lasso will overcome the spell for them all. Later at the Hall of Justice, the Super Friends thank Mira and Green Lantern for the help. Batman, of course, wonders who did this to them. That who, at the same time, is back at his throne, not understanding how his plan failed. He vows that his next plan will surely succeed, but he is countered by one of his Super Friends' puppets, which says, I wouldn't count on that, friend. The Overlord is baffled at how a puppet can talk. All right, Tim. So we're going to go through this kind of scene by scene, but overall, what was your impression of this story?
It is so much fun. It is such a fun little story. Ramona Freitas' artwork on it, I just find delightful. It feels very all ages by even today's standards. So I just enjoy that part of it. The story itself, it goes from, approachable and sort of fun to tongue in cheek, if not unintentionally hilarious at some points. there's some visual images in it that are just like, are you kidding me? So I'm just loving. I had a great time reading it. I'm glad to be on for this one because this is really a fun issue. I think it's a winner.
Oh, it really is. I mean, again, the Overlord, as he's sitting on his throne with his magenta jumper and his fur-lined cape. He looks a little like Liberace, what Liberace kind of wore this time. It's all, you can't take him even, not that the Super Friends stories were ever meant to be taken, quote-unquote, seriously, but even within the world of the Super Friends, Overlord is pretty much a mort, in extremis. I mean, he's sitting there playing with his puppets, and he's all like, argh! And he's got even puppets of supervillains. He's got a Mirror Master puppet and a Kronos puppet. I love that he took the time to like draw the stripes on the Kronos pants puppet, he took me a little extra effort. I mean, he seems like a goof, and then this helmet that he puts on, the Thought helmet, is just so goofy looking. And then there's this great profile shot, and it's got this giant kind of like ray gun thing sticking out the front, and it's like, thank God that no one else is around because he just looks like an idiot.
There's a lot to be said for that unicorn horn that he's protruding out of there. It's like, sure. Yeah, that's a look.
Yeah,
that's definitely a look.
Tough to clear doors sometimes with that thing if he turns sideways.
But I have a question for you. From the very first page, is that he's bragging about this character Sandor Fane?
Yes.
Was that a real thing?
For yes.
Previous issue.
It was in a previous issue because there was another Overlord who was just as pathetic, and we find out that this guy who literally was called Underling. He was basically siphoning sources from Sandor Fane. And then when Sandor Fane got defeated by the Super Friends, this guy took over as the new Overlord, as if the world was crying out for another Overlord. So yes, DC fans, there's not one Overlord, there's two Overlords.
This is Overlord the Second.
Overlord the Second. So that's, yes, but that's what it is.
Wow. Right now.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's so
up
that's
and Overlord.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So it's all just, yeah, very, very silly. I love the sequence. I've mentioned this virtually every issue when Ramona Freyden, I mean, God, I'm a huge fan. I don't even need to go on and on about it, but I do. But I love the Ramona Freyden. I love her body language. I love the panel where we see the Super Friends, and they're sitting on desks like you would in your house. You know, I love that she doesn't make them look stiff. She's like, they're sitting around like it's their living room. And of course, to the whole Justice, it is their living room.
Yeah, they're so casual there. I love it. And yet, like, even Superman's pose himself. Superman, the person you least expect to be casual. He's like, arms folded across, his ankles crossed too. It's like, yeah, that's just delightful.
Yeah.
Now, I got to ask, though, about the Overlord. With all of the attention to detail that he did to his marionettes, are we talking about a guy who basically wanted to be the world's greatest marionette performer and was foiled and has decided that his revenge is going to be to take over the world because he can't be the greatest marionette player?
No.
Because his marionettes are amazing.
They're really lifelike. I mean, this is McFarlane Toys level articulation points of these things.
They change facial expressions. I know that's all the artwork, but I don't care. I'm in my head is like, this guy, why did he get out of marionettehood? I mean, whatever that profession we call it, marionettehood, I'm calling it that.
Puppeteer,
How did he lose that job and his only recourse is to become the Overlord? Because it seems like that he just, I don't know. I think there's money on the table that he's just not getting because not in his marionette career.
Yeah, but he should have gotten into the toy sculpting business. He would have had quite a career at that. Yeah.
Oh, maybe it was just before ahead of his time. Like you said, McFarlane Toys, maybe he's just ahead of his time.
Actually, he should have gotten a job at DC Direct. That would have actually been a good job for him.
There you go.
He's sitting there painting the Kronos stripes on his trunks, you know, one at a time. He's like, I got to get this right. Yeah, these marionettes are pretty amazing. They have a magic lasso that glows and everything. I hope he puts these away when he's done with them.
He's got the scales right on Aquaman's shirt too.
So. Yep.
Which stuff. Is unintentionally a huge props to Ramona and Bob Smith, the inker, for doing that on this little marionette figure. Mm-hmm. So that's really a huge attention to detail.
Yep. They did not cheap out on this book, even though it was meant for little kids. They did not. After there's this meeting with the Super Friends, then we get this marvelous full page. We didn't get much of that at Super Friends. They didn't do a lot of full pages. But you get this sort of montage of the Super Friends as the Overlord is taking over their minds, and they turn angry. And man, it's so fun to see them draw Ramona Freyden draw angry superheroes, and to the point Wonder Woman's like, "You men, always thinking you know what's best. I'll show you what a Wonder Woman can do." And she storms off, and then you've got Aquaman pounding his fist, Superman pounding the table, Batman with his cape over his arm with that slightly sinister kind of look, and it's great. I just love that they're all like, they just get mad all of a sudden. It's a really great page.
Oh, I agree. They just look wonderful. I mean, the eyebrows that Ramona gives all the characters, even though Batman's are kind of obscured by his cowl, it's like you still got his blue eyebrows through the cowl. So you definitely have the angry eyebrows. I think of Metamorpho's face. That how she brings expression to him as like, that's a little bit here, you know, she really can do that really well. So that's just it. And yeah, Wonder Woman's body language here is just, you know, she has had enough. These boots were made for walking and I'm out of here. It's great stuff. Aquaman's hand slamming down, just good stuff. But you know, now we're going to go back to the plan of the Overlord. It's like, okay, you have a device that can control the minds of anybody. And
you make a puppet of them, that's all that it takes.
He does use the puppets, but he aims at the puppets, but does he really need the puppets? And it's like, and he can do anybody anywhere. So why is he only doing these? Why does he only do these seven? Why doesn't he do the whole Justice League? Because he's got the whole, he could do the whole rest of them. I guess he ran out of parts. I'm sorry. He must have run out of parts.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's because comics. That's why.
I know why it is, but you know, you know, yeah. we're podcasting. We're going nitpick.
Yeah. It is amazing to think you can come up with something that you can aim at a puppet and that will take over the real mind of the person. Like, wow, that is that, like Lex Luthor would be impressed by that kind of level of tech. Mm-hmm. And he's come up with that himself. I mean, good Lord. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, why not take over the rest of the Justice League at this point? I would make a little Metamorpho puppet and I'll, you know, maybe mm-hmm. you know, a bunch of other, you know, Black Lightning. I'm thinking of Outsiders because we just did the show.
Oh, yeah.
But absolutely. That kind of thing. Now, speaking of JLAers, I mean, man, if you are a Green Lantern fan, this issue is going to make you mad because Batman takes Green Lantern out like a punk. I mean, Green Lantern is one of the most powerful members of the DC Universe. He's got a ring that can do anything. And Batman just knocks him out with some yellow smoke dye and that smoke gas. That's mm-hmm. it. Green Lantern is out for the count. Like, man, if you're a Green Lantern fan, you're like, hey, E. Nelson Bridwell, come on, man. What are you doing?
And he just, and it's not like he throws it aggressively or
he just drops it on the ground.
Just like, I'll just drop it down on the floor. It'll take care of you. Yeah, I'm glad you used that word because yes, I was thinking to myself like, oh man, Green Lantern just got punked. Oh my gosh,
really? Yeah. last issue we talked about that Aquaman kind of got dumped on a lot just so they could sort of make him win at the end. Mm. Sometimes they have to over exaggerate to get rid of somebody. But man, it's sort of funny when you think about it because it's like Green Lantern really isn't that essential to the story after this. You really could have come up with somebody else to get the Green Lantern. So it's like you could have had a different member of the JLA who's not quite so awesomely powerful. Could have been Hawkman, you know, and you're like, all right, I can buy that Batman could take Hawkman out pretty quickly. But Green Lantern? Come on. I mean, for Pete's sakes. Jeez.
On not world's greatest detective. I don't know. I mean, world's greatest detective. Oof. But well, we'll get to that point in a minute. But it's like, Green Lantern does play a sort of important part in one spot, and then we don't really need him the whole after that.
No,
except for a part that I think is unintentionally hilarious. But you know,
we'll get to that. That's true. I'm being a little unfair. Green Lantern is a little more essential to the story, but still, it's just like I maybe could have. Found it, but okay, whatever. E. Nelson Bridwell. We've got Superman declaring a Superman empire to everyone that's standing on a rock at Rio de Janeiro. And here we get our first appearance of Green Flame, who will, of course, become a fairly large player in the DC universe going forward.
Mm-hmm.
This is her debut. Yeah. Kind of relatively quickly, you know, appears and then is defeated. And she comes back in Super Friends as part of the Global Guardians. But yeah, I mean, this is a creation mm-hmm. that would go on and pay dividends to the DC Universe for decades afterward.
Oh, yeah. She gives her name in Spanish first. A Furia Verde, the Green Fury. So she's just going by Green Fury technically for this issue. But we all know that she's Green Flame.
Right.
And eventually she'll be joining the Justice League International, which is where I know her best. I think, you know, probably most people know her, might know her more from that, and continuing even to this day. So it's like, that's a big deal. You know, her first appearance, that's really kind of a big deal. Although it's as in the unintentionally hilarious thing is that, yes, we know that her main power at this point is blowing flame from her mouth. So she flies by blasting green flame from her nostrils. And she has to, and just the I will give her props though. That takes an amazing amount of core strength not to burn your own feet to
that's do true, yeah, way. That's right. She has to be angled slightly.
Yeah.
That's true.
But it's like she's basically, you know, snotting her way through the sky. It's like, are you kidding me?
God help you if she gets a cold, because you're in trouble at that point.
Oh, she's done that though in JLI. They've had more than one time when she had a cold and would sneeze and burn something out.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So that's harking directly. That's more like just a play on the powers in general. But the fact that this panel shows that specifically, again, unintentionally hilarious. Because I don't think they meant, if they meant this tongue in cheek, they're really solidly tongue in cheek. But it just.
Yeah, it looks. You could have it come out of her hands, out of her. You know, I mean, something. Yeah, but the nostrils is like, wow, that's really, really kind of tough.
Well, it's like, yeah, if your power is that limited, that you breathe flame, it's like, okay, this is on paper a very creative way to use your powers for propulsion. On paper.
Yeah. But then you got to make somebody draw it, and you're like,
yeah, it's like, Ramona did what she could with it. She did a great job with it. You know, it looks great, and it's ridiculous.
So, Wonder Woman takes on her sister Nubia, who we've seen in other Wonder Woman comics, and actually even got her own doll as part of Amigo line, which is kind of amazing. And
wow.
There weren't a lot of Wonder Woman characters to do. Right. And mm-hmm. I found this, according to Mike's Amazing World, this was Nubia's last appearance. She never came back in any DC comic. Now, I'm sure she was brought back post-crisis or whatever, but this is like her last appearance in the original DC universe, which is kind of amazing. And I love that final panel on the page of Wonder Woman and Nubia just beating the crap out of each other. I think it looks great.
Well, not to go into it too much because I really don't know the details, but over the last year or so, Nubia has been making a reappearance. She's been a star. She's even to be the star of some Wonder Woman comics lately. So she's back.
And yeah, everybody's back eventually.
She's back, and just recently. So that's it's what amazing to me is to feel like, oh, that's not just made up from recently. That's an older standing thing. I had no idea. So that's pretty remarkable. But it's like, yeah, what you're molded from the white clay instead of the black clay. It's like, okay, sure. we're not kids comic. Moving on.
Yeah.
Moving on.
So
but they have a good fight. They have a good fight. I mean, those hits look like they hurt.
Yeah.
That's great.
Wonder Woman looks super angry. Again, Ramona Frayn's great at drawing that.
That's not a super friend sort of thing, right? To actually like hit each other. I mean, in the cartoons, they definitely didn't. They definitely did in the cartoons. I mean, so that's kind of nifty.
Yeah, there's more fisticuffs in the comics, certainly. But generally, yeah, we didn't see them kind of like literally like punching each other's face and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They tried to kind of find some other more gentle way of fighting each other. Right. So you got down in Australia, you've got Robin trying to start something. And I love that he's standing on steps with a sign that says Youth Revolt, trying to talk to young kids. You could totally see this would have been something Burt Ward's Robin would have done, you know, if they had done that plot line where like he gets taken over by some gas pellets and he becomes evil. And he's like, you know, holy generation gap. He totally could see that.
Or with a Zany Haney in his Teen Titans.
Totally.
This was like every issue of that, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, he was always fighting the man. Yeah,
it's fighting the man.
Yeah,
keeping us down. Gotta fight for the young generation.
I don't know, Robin. If you're trying to convince six Australians at a time, this is gonna take a while. Superman can stand on a cliff face and yell, use his super voice, and boom across the country. Robin's going to do it six Aussies at a time. I mean, it's just kind of amazing. I mean, Paul Hicks is probably in this crowd somewhere. It's just good. And then you've got Tasmanian Devil showing up. Tasmanian Devil is like so close to kind of looking really cool, but then he looks kind of silly too with his kind of like little koala bear ears or whatever. I like his fangy teeth. Like, that's cool. And I like the big T on his chest. So it's like, if you, as drawn by Ramona Frayn, he's not at all threatening looking, which he's not supposed to. But like, it's a little bit like the nostrils. It's like, it's just a little on the side of silly.
Right. I know what you're talking about. I think that his profile shot actually looks better than the front facing shots.
Agreed.
I like that profile version of him. Something about the front facing where they give too much definition to his nose. I think maybe that's the problem.
Right, yeah.
Needs to just like blend that out. Just blend that a little bit more. Don't put so much black around your eye, buddy. Come on. Just let it blend and make it a nice, more solid gray. But, and also when he doesn't have pupils, that looks much better in terms of looking intimidating.
Yeah.
But when he has the pupils and the pink ears and the pointy teeth with the mouth looking kind of squared off, then it's like, you're just a little silly, dude. Just a little silly.
He probably sold a million.
And also kind of disappointed. Kind of disappointed he doesn't spin around really fast either, though.
He probably could have made a fortune merchandising himself as like a stuffed animal that you could sell to kids. You know, just buy yourself an own Tasmanian devil. You squeeze him and he talks or whatever. That would be great. Down in Atlantis, we've got Aquaman. And, of course, he starts acting weird. And he's like, I'm the monarch and the oldest surviving civilization of Earth. I will attack and conquer the land empires. And Mira's like, he's gone berserk. And I did some research, and I realized this is the first time Ramona Freyden ever drew Mira. She never had a chance before this. Yes, because she was on the Aquaman strip, but left it before Aquaman, long before Mira showed up. And she never drew the book after this. This is her first bite at the Mira apple, if you may forgive that metaphor. She's, of course, drawn Aqualad before. But this is the first time. I forget about that it's like, oh, when I think of Ramona Freyden, she has a long history with this character. But no, she never really got to draw Mira outside of the Super Friends. So here it is, one of my favorite characters drawn by Ramona Freyden. And I get some classic Aquaman action. There's a squid. It's just one page, but I love it because it's my favorite character drawn by one of my favorite artists.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it's a great page. And I mean, we also got to give props to Aquaman here because he had to fight two people. Mm-hmm. He didn't just fight one. And like, we shouldn't also mention that, you know, Robin took out Tasmanian Devil with a gas pellet to the face.
Right.
See, he actually used some effort with that gas pellet, unlike against Batman against Green Lantern. Right. He actually threw it at his face. So, you know, come on, Batman. You know, I think you're, slacking off. But, you know, yeah, Aquaman actually is like taking out two heroes in his one page. The shark looks great. The squid looks wonderful. I love the little, you know, you get like the texture on the squid's head. Mm-hmm. I love that part. And the suckers on his legs. You can see all those. Mara looks great. I mean, if you hadn't told me that this was the first time that Ramona had drawn Mara, I would have thought that she'd drawn her for years because, you know, she looks wonderful. You know, she nails the look, got the costume looks fantastic. Obviously, you know, she's so good at these underwater scenes that it's a great page.
Yeah, I love that colorist Gene D'Angelo gives some of the panels a greenish tint because we're underwater. Mm-hmm. I think that's great, too. So, I absolutely love this page. So then we've got the Wonder Twins in the Arabian Peninsula, and that's where they meet Seraph, another member of the soon-to-be Global Guardians. This is his second appearance in the book. And man, I make fun of the Global Guardians a little bit because some of them are pretty goofy, Tuatara and some of the, the Salamander, some of them are a little goofy, but I am a Seraph stan. I think he is really fun. I think he's got a great set of powers. He looks cool. Mm-hmm. He's got these accessories and he's got that great Steve Reeves Hercules chest going on. I really think he's an impressive character, and I love here that he's the one who kind of helps the Wonder Twins solve it and uses the Ring of Solomon to beam up to the JLA satellite. I think it's just terrific. It's a great cameo by this character.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Well, and he was one of the characters in Super Friends number 7.
That's right.
So I remembered him so well from that, you know, teaming up with Superman himself in that issue. And it's like, you know, my dad was a minister, you know, and so he probably looked at me a little sideways about me talking about this character. It's like, I don't think that's really how those things work, son. take a little fast and loose with the parts of Christianity or Judaism there, and turning them into superpowers. I think he's kind of like not necessarily sure if he really approved of that take on the character, but I thought he was delightful. And I thought that the heart was in the right place, making a character like this and making him reflect those things. Because that's something, you know, that you might be shying away from, especially nowadays. I think that would be, you know, if you're going to do a character like this nowadays, you're going to do him almost farcically and make him over the top strange or weird or somebody to make fun of. So the fact that they made him an honorable character, a positive character, but just gave him some roots, from some stories that those of us who remember Sunday school would know what those things are related to. I love him. I think he's great. I'm sorry we didn't get to see more of him in, as time has gone on. And I'm like, they always I think in his first appearance, they even pointed out, like, yeah, the Ring of David isn't really a thing, but I, whatever.
Yeah, come
whatever.
On.
Yeah. Whatever. It's a wonderful extrapolation for this kind of, for the history of what this character is supposed to represent. So yeah, I just love him. So I'm with you all the way. It's like, give us more Seraph, you know, where's the Seraph backup strip?
Well, there was one. He did have a brief run as a backup in Super Friends near the end of the book's run. So they actually saw some potential. And I know I must have said this when we did Super Friends number 7, because this was not an original thought I had then, but I'm going to say it every time Seraph is in the book. Do you remember, you may not have had them, but you probably saw the ads, that line of toys by Remco that were those Warlord dolls? Do you remember seeing those?
I remember those ads.
It's Warlord and Hercules and Machiste and Arrak, Son of Thunder.
Yep.
Seraph would have been perfect for that line, because he has that same build and he has a bunch of accessories. Mm-hmm. He has the staff and the ring. Like, he would have fit in perfectly with that line of toys. You know,
it's
a shame they never got a chance to do it. Obviously, they weren't thinking about it. But, I mean, man, if you could do Arrak, Son of Thunder, why not Seraph?
Well, and that was also long before He-Man came along.
Right.
So, imagine that kind of competition that might have engendered. With that line of characters and the He-Man line of characters, it could have just fairly been interesting. But yeah, so no, he would have totally been fitting in with that group.
Yep. And by the way, Jaina, in the form of a sphinx with her own human head, her own Exorian head, is pure nightmare fuel. That is totally David Cronenberg, Brundlefly, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Reanimator kind of thing. It's just really weird looking.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and as I remember from the cartoons, she usually turned into, I thought she only turned into solely authentic animals and real animals and not fictional ones. But maybe, I don't know, maybe she turned into a dragon at some point or a unicorn at some point. Or
they've played fast and loose with what she can get to.
All right, okay.
So Green Lantern beams Superman, Wonder Woman, and Robin back. So there you go. They're using his ring to be able to do that. Now, again, you could have come up with Flash could run around them really fast and do it, or Zatanna. She was in the Justice League by this point. Maybe Zatanna being taken out by a gas pellet would be a little less hard to believe because she's new. At least Green Lantern is getting to use his ring power here. Now, this is something that we commented on when we did Outcasters. I don't know why I have a trouble saying the show. We did that.
I have trouble saying it.
I love Bruce Wayne when he's drawn like a 1950s rich guy. I love it. And he's drawn that way in Batman and the Outsiders number 19, which we covered. And then he's drawn like that here because he's got this big collar. And then he's got like the ascot under his neck, and it's just I love that Batman dresses like it is 1952, or he's like ready to show up at like Dean Martin's, you know, late night roast. I love those shots of Bruce Wayne.
It is pretty great. It does look like this could be Adam West dressed as
out in
public, not as Bruce Wayne, not for the TV show, but just Adam West himself. What he would wear. It's really great. And sometimes when I'm looking at this on the DCU Infinite app, like the first panel that he shows up like that, the ascot is, the coloring is just a little bit off. So it almost looks like it's still his neck and that he's just got like the couple buttons undone on the top of his shirt, which is like, wow, that's 70s there, Bruce. Okay. Right. But then, you know, you turn the page and like, oh, it's the ascot. Okay. Never mind.
Yeah.
Never mind. That's even better. Or, I appreciate it more. I don't know if it's really better, but I appreciate it more.
I swear, they really would have done like a Vanity Fair, a Gotham, you know, Gotham fashion show, and the fashions of Bruce Wayne. This is great. So then we get the scene where the rest of the Super Friends have to try and defeat Aquaman, and Aquaman manages to fight all of them off, even Green Lantern.
Yes.
Green Lantern tries to hit Aquaman in the head, and he just leans over and lets his yellow hair stop him from getting. So Aquaman is managing to defeat all of the Super Friends with Green Lantern considering how often he kind of gets put upon in previous issues, I love that. I love that he's like angry Aquaman is able to fight the entire group off. That's fantastic.
And this is the other part that's unintentionally hilarious. He's headbutting a Green Lantern beam to stop it. It's like he spoiled me with his yellow hair. What?
Hair isn't actually yellow. You know, it's not actually yellow.
What is actually yellow is what my brain would start to go. But it's like it's just crazy. It's so funny. Just to see that image of you're just headbutting the beam, and that actually like foiling Green Lantern. It's like, so he can't fight any blonde people. So man, he would have had a lot of trouble with various Southern California volleyball teams. I think he wouldn't set a chance. So
if you're
we get the conceit that a squid can find a hunk of kryptonite very fast too. Which,
yeah, there you go.
Hey,
yeah.
Hey, it's super friends.
All over the
kryptonite's place. All over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
By the way, if you're a Green Lantern villain, I would prepare to fight him by just peeing in a jar and then just throwing it at him because he can't stop it. So not only would you defeat Green Lantern, but you do it in a really humiliating fashion, which would just be great. So you're like evil star drinking a bunch of water and then you're just waiting and then you just throw it. So,
That reminds me of an episode of Justice League, the cartoon.
Really? Did that happen in an episode of Justice
League?
Can't wait till Chris and Cindy get to that one.
Well, we'll see. This is one they already covered where we have Flash and Green Lantern are the stars and they're fighting Gorilla Grodd. And there's one scene where Grodd mind controls the Flash and the Flash starts throwing all sorts of stuff at Green Lantern. John Stewart, he's about to block it all. Well, and Flash picks up a yellow banana and throws it at him. And for some reason, John Stewart doesn't block it with his green shield and lets it hit him and kind of hits him on the arm or the forehead. Now, it doesn't do anything. Just like plop. But it's like, did he seriously not stop it with the yellow? Because he's vulnerable to yellow. They don't say, but in my head, he's vulnerable to yellow because he wouldn't stop the banana. It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, again, you can't think about it too terribly much, or otherwise you're like, wait, that doesn't, yeah. Okay.
Well, podcasting.
Yeah, because podcasting.
And like you said, for Jan, it's like, I think what really is the nightmare fuel also is just the fact that the neck of her sphinx is so long.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
It's just like, it's longer than one of her legs. It's like, gee, in the criminy.
Yeah, it's like something you see in John Carpenter's The Thing. It's just got that really creepy, you know, Rob Bookteen action going on there. So we get Wonder Woman uses her mental telepathy to get Mira to use her hard water and then just clock her husband in the head with a giant hard water fist, which is great.
See, that's how you do it, Green Lantern. That's how you do it.
Exactly. You get up behind him and punch him in the head with a green hand. So I'm sure Mira has been dying to do this for a long time because Aquaman can be really bullheaded. So I think that's great. I love that she shows up. And I love that the Green Lantern and Mira show up at the Hall of Justice. I like that they make the trip to show up and kind of, be part of a gang and like, oh, we're happy that this all worked out. But then, of course, we're like, well, wait a minute. Who did this to us? Batman's like, why did we become evil? Like, what is that? And then, as I said, we get to this very strange ending where the puppets talk back to the Overlord, and this is not a continued story. It's next issue is a new story. So it's just, what? Like, wait, how? Why are the puppets talking? I don't understand. And, I mean, the Overlord will come back in Super Friends in later issues, but, okay. And I'm not reading far ahead. I'm only reading like one at a time, but I don't think they ever pay this off. So it's just like, it's just a weird kind of Dada-esque moment that the puppets are talking to Overlord, or is just Overlord going nuts?
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's like, you almost would think, is there super ventriloquism involved? That would be the thing, but we don't get any kind of payoff on that front.
Yeah.
And it's like, if they were to do that, you know, they'd be arresting him, or at least like a, now, don't you try that again, young man. So it's like, it's very bizarre. It's like this, like, what is this, House of Secrets? What the heck?
Yeah, it's got a little bit of a creepy vibe to it. It really does. Yeah, it's very, very strange.
I got to say that Wonder Woman's Diana Prince outfit is rocking. I really dig it. And the fact that when she changes into her, when Green Lantern turns her into her civilian identity and she still has her ginormous purse, it's like, okay, yep, that's, she kept it with her. And when she changed costumes, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Got to have it with you at all times. But yeah, I mean, Diana Prince is like, you know, she's rocking her outfit and her glasses. It's like, man, it's like, how, if Steve Trevor was around Diana Prince all the time, it's like, why would he care about Wonder Woman? With her around all the time. Jiminy criminy.
Yeah, absolutely.
What was I seeing in here that was also kind of just... Oh, well, so we have, you know, Mara and Green Lantern there in the final scene, and it's like, do we ever get Superman apologizing to Green Flame or Robin apologizing to Tasmanian Devil?
That happened off panel.
You know, I'm sure. I mean, of course they did, but it's like, you just kind of one of the things, like, yeah, you got to wrap these things up. If this was a serious comic book, then there'd be like, I will plot my revenge when the next time I see them and they're, you know.
Yeah, he's gotta only got out.
Gotta be careful for that.
He's only got 17 pages to work with. You know, these stories have to move at a lightning clip. And then if you count the first page, which is a splash page, he's only got 16 to work with. So he's just barreling through these stories. And that's part of the charm of these Super Friends stories. This stuff just sort of happens because it does. So that's the end of the story. And it said the Overlord will be back. Now, there's one other thing I just want to mention. I generally don't get into the letters pages because it's generally not anything super worth covering. But there is a letter from a guy named John Gove who points out that in Super Friend number 20, Aquaman only appeared in 11 of 80 panels. I really love that. That's a man after my own heart, that he's counting the panels that Aquaman appears in. I just think that's very, very anal retentive, and I appreciate that as a fellow anal retentive Aquaman fan. So
that fan definitely is definitely keeping a spreadsheet of all those panel counts and appearance and percentages for other books.
Oh yeah.
So I'm fine with that.
When they created Excel, he was so excited.
Oh yeah. The ending of this story, likewise, when I was reading it, I was also thinking to myself, are we getting near the end? Is this really the finish here?
Yes, it is.
I don't see, how are they going to catch the bad guy? How are they going to you know, wrap this up? It's like, oh, they don't. Okay. That was really surprising for a kid's comic book. I will give them props. Like, that's very interesting. Now, it's not like there's a bigger sophisticated story being built here. There's not like a real big subplot with ongoing behind the scenes machinations necessarily being planted here, but still, that's pretty interesting to do in a kid's comic book that leaves that ambiguous ending. That's really kind of a challenging thing to do.
Yeah, the Super Friends comics have a history of the last page accomplishing more in a couple of panels than most modern comics would do in like a full issue. Like, they just zip through stuff so fast. Right. And that is just, again, that's just a hallmark of one of the stories. So, okay, now I have to ask you, as we're wrapping up here, the same questions I ask everybody. Who do you think is the best friend? Who do you think, what hero in this book came off best?
Okay, at first I was going to say Wonder Woman, because I feel like, you know, she did the best job of wrapping up the final threat and kind of like, you know, reaching out to Mara, to stop Aquaman. But I'm really going to give it to Aquaman for holding his own against the entire Super Friends all by himself. That was just amazing. So I got to give it to him. It's kind of funny, because with all of them being the bad guys more or less in this issue, it's hard. None of them really could step up and be the hero per se. But you know, Aquaman for holding his own against, you know, Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman and Robin, and Green Lantern, that's A+ list superhero. So that's what I would give.
You're a man after my own heart, Tim. I mean, I obviously normally I would have given that, because that is impressive that even for one page he can fight off the Super Friends. But I just gave it to Aquaman last month, and I don't. And everyone knows I'm in the tank, no pun intended, for Aquaman. I'm going to give it to Seraph, because I think, you know, it's like all Superman. All the Super Friends, you know, basically defeat their foes, Tasmanian Devil and Nubia. Mm-hmm. Although we don't see Nubia get defeated, but we assume that she does. Green Flame,
right?
But it's Seraph is the one who kind of stops this and is like, wait, hold on, and let's work this out. Mm-hmm. And he's the one that figures out you know, hey, you're changing back. Let's go to the satellite and do this. Like, so, and again, I just think he's such an interesting character that when he shows up, he's really interesting. So I gave it to Seraph because I just think it's a fun guest appearance. And it, to me, you want to see more of this guy. But he disappears so quickly. I mean, I wish they had found a way or some reason to keep him around. Yeah, it would have gotten a little crowded, but it is kind of funny where he's like, all right, I've done my bit. I'm out. And he just goes back to the Arabian Peninsula. But overall, right.
I do give Seraph props. I have my own notes for that, in that even though he didn't free the Wonder Twins from the mind control himself, he also didn't fall into the typical superhero trap of coming in with fists swinging, so that even when they break out of the control, they're still fighting. Instead, it's like, whoa, you're okay? All right. Well, let's figure out how to help the rest of the super friends. So I do give him props for like being the thoughtful superhero on the scene, where normally it would be the, you know, we'd have the immediate misunderstanding and then team up situation. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I like that. I did like that touch a lot.
Yeah.
Do you think that they maybe gave Aquaman a better role in this one to counter some of the less than stellar appearances beforehand?
Yeah, it could be. It could be that the E and B, I don't think really played favorites. I think it was just easier to write Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, and they were the marquee characters. But yeah, he kind of balanced it where Aquaman would kind of be laid low, but then he would brought back, you know, in just two issues, he gets like basically a whole issue to himself. So yeah, E and B to try to balance that out a little bit. So yeah, that might have been it. He might have been like, you know what? Now, he didn't write the previous issue. It was Denny O'Neill, but maybe he saw, hey, Aquaman kind of gets dumped on a lot in this one, so let me give him, you know, make him a little more impressive here, or something like that. Because again, I think he liked all five of these characters pretty equally, plus the Wonder Twins. So regarding the villain roundup, I always ask, do you think this villain could really do much outside of the DC universe? And Overlord, outside of Super Friends, Overlord, no. He's just too silly. Whichever Overlord we're talking about, he's just too goofy looking. So, no. He's, I mean, yeah, that mental command helmet is pretty impressive, but look what he does with it. He fails pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So, no, my argument is the same as I always say. Overlord is good for Super Friends, but you put him in the regular DCU, and I think it just everybody just is regaled with laughter.
Well, I agree, really, because just his look is ridiculous. But, you know, while it was somewhat tongue-in-cheek comparing him to a certain Marvel villain, his shtick is almost identical to that Marvel villain, and he's been around for decades. So, you know, it's kind of, it's just interesting that his motivation, though, is to take over the world. Hmm. And that's not what the Puppet Master's motivation is. His motivation is usually, I want to beat up Ben Grimm because my stepdaughter likes him.
Right.
So I'm going to beat up her boyfriend. That's usually what his motivation is. So you know, it's the power set definitely is one that seems to be one that's around all the time, but this character, no, he's a joke. So it's fun to laugh at him.
Yeah.
So he could come back in Ambush Bug. Yeah, that'd be fine.
Oh, there you go. Right. Yeah. And he would have been all right as part of like the that Injustice League that JLI fought with Major Disaster and Clue Master and Big Sur. That he would have fit in there because he's just so goofy.
Oh, it would have been hilarious because I think even he would have been perfect addition to that, and even they would have gotten tired of his crud.
Probably. So that's Super Friends number 25. It's a really fun issue. Again, we have some great guest stars. We get Mira drawn by Ramona Fraiden for the first time. That's impressive. You get Green Lantern in there. I always love it when Ramona Fraiden gets to draw any other members of the Super DC universe outside of the Super Friends. And we get a guest appearance by Seraph, all in 17 pages. So pretty cool stuff. So
that is lean storytelling.
Yes. Yeah. No fat. No fat on these stories at all. So Tim, thank you so much for coming by and talking Super Friends with me. I really enjoyed it. And this podcast crossover that we did was just a blast.
Yeah, I had so much fun with it. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
Sure. Well, you can find me at The Outcasters, that my podcast that covers Batman and the Outsiders. We're on the Twitters at Bat Outcasters. And you also can find me at TimPrice17. You also can find me on the Batgirl Cassandra Cain podcast, hosted by Ashford Wright of the Write On Network. And you can find us there on Twitter at Huntress Podcast.
All right. Outstanding. Check the show out, everybody. It's a lot of fun. So we want you to stay tuned. I'm going to play some commercial announcements. And when I come back, I'm going to do some listener feedback.
The Justice League wouldn't help him, so Batman formed a new team. These people of power are all looking for something, be it their past or a purpose or simply somewhere to fit in. These are the heroes for a troubled age. They are the Outsiders.
We are the Outsiders.
Covering Mike W. Barr's 1983 series from the very beginning, as they face villains no other team can, like Agent Orange, the Force of July, and the Nuclear Family. Puns. This is The Outcasters, a Batman and the Outsiders podcast. Look for us with the Huntress podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Or listen at our website, thehuntresspodcast.com, and follow us on Twitter at @BatOutcasters. We are the Outcasters, because to live outside the law, you must be honest.
We are the Outsiders!
You need a nutritious breakfast every morning, and Cap'n Crunch's peanut butter cereal can be a part of it. When there's peanut butter cereal, Smedley is just like a little kid. Make that a big kid.
Now from Cap'n Crunch cereal, a diving dolphin. Baking powder makes it dive.
Put it in the water. It goes up and down. Wow.
There's a diving dolphin in specially marked boxes of Cap'n Crunch cereal. Baking powder not included.
And it's time for listener feedback. And this is the feedback we got for the previous episode of For All Mankind, episode 24, with my guest, J. Jones Goldstein. First up is Martin Gray, who says, that's a great cover set in the world's worst sauna. Another Sergius issue. I wonder what was keeping Ian B. especially busy. Anyway, not a bad issue, even though the Wonder Twins focuses aren't my favorite. Poor Aquaman, but he's his own worst enemy, never othering to carry a backpack of water or utility belt with water bottles. Even the Red Bee always carried an insect pal to use in combat. And okay, Zan was indisposed for part of the issue, but when he's near Aquaman, no problem. Just go rain cloud over Arthur's head. Rob pointed out the excellent body language when Aquaman was contacting his alien eel allies. The previous panel is great too, as Miss Frayden demonstrates her understanding of lighting. Sean M. Meyer says, I love the title of this issue, Past, Present, and Danger. It sounds like it could have been an episode of Johnny Quest. I'll keep my Ramona appreciation comments to one in this issue. There could have been many, many more. But putting out the panel on page 2 of the Super Friends peering into the pyramid from outside, I think it's absolutely gorgeous. I couldn't disagree with you more on your thoughts about Zond and Zahanra and their ability to be real threats to the rest of the DCU. Make no mistake, they aren't out to rob a bank or obtain world power. These two straight up just want to kill every member of the Super Friends. It doesn't get much eviler than that. Fair enough, Sean. Matt Servais says, thanks for another great episode. And Evil Zan and Jaina, awesome. The Super Friends cartoon certainly did try and stay safe and friendly, but they did on at least 3 occasions get morbid and introduced us young tykes to the concept of death. The most blatant was the challenge of the Super Friends episode, History of Doom. A hero of aliens arrive on the Earth to find it completely devoid of life. The Legion of Doom was brought about, had brought about Doomsday, killing everybody, including themselves. The aliens study history tapes in the JLA computer and use time travel to help the Super Friends avoid a global holocaust. There's also Super Friends Rest in Peace for the same reason. It begins with the JLA attending Batman's funeral. Then throughout the episode, each hero is killed by the Legion of Doom using a device that has all the heroes' weaknesses. In the end, we find out the heroes used those oh-so-handy robot duplicates of themselves into fooling the Legion into believing they'd all been killed so that the villains would throw away the device thinking they no longer needed it. Finally, we have the very last episode ever of the Super Friends under the Superpowers Collected Guardians title, The Death of Superman. Here the world believes Superman has died of kryptonite poisoning. There's a funeral for the Man of Steel attended by dignitaries from throughout the galaxy. Darkseid leads a massive invasion of Earth and captures most of the Super Friends. It isn't until the remaining heroes hiding out at the Fortress of Solitude discover Superman was in a self-induced coma to hold off the lethal effects of the kryptonite and not truly dead, the day is saved. Yeah, Matt, those are all great examples. In particular, Super Friends Rest in Peace is an episode that looms large in my childhood imagination. I remember watching it on the air the first time, and the Batman gets zapped and they're like, Batman is dead. And it was like, whenever I think I was 7, I was shocked that that could happen. So yes, as you say, there are some great examples of the Super Friends trying to push that envelope a little. Generally, yeah, they try to be family friendly and very safe and I'd stay away from those topics. But once in a while, when they did do it, they kind of leaned in hard. So yeah, thank you for the history lesson. Those are all fun episodes of the show. Cellar Dweller says, hello, superfans, Rob and Jeremiah. Hope everyone who celebrates had a good Thanksgiving. Having Aquaman to be the best friend this podcast certainly makes up for how he was treated this issue. While Aquaman was never a big fave of mine, I can remember reading this and thinking, come on, he's the king of the seven seas. He's not this easy to take down, or he wouldn't be feeling sorry for himself. Whenever I see evil twins pop up, I'm reminded of the Super Friends episode Universe of Evil, where Superman is transported to an evil dimension and has to fight the evil version of the Super Friends. Isamu Hideki Yukinori says, maybe the Super Friends in the subscription ad were testing the Wonder Twins to be sure they weren't actually Zond and Zahanra in disguise again and were ready to fight if they were. That's a great... I like that idea, Isamu, that the ad fits perfectly with the story in this particular issue. Nice call. Rob McCarthy says, of course, in my real hometown of San Francisco, you couldn't find anything comics-wise. When I was at my great-grandmother's house in Salinas, the one Marvel you could find was the Hulk, and last month's G.I. Joe, the DCs were Firestorm and more JLA than anything else. Yeah, I Hulk was one of my regular buys, and I never missed it, and that's because the Hulk was so popular. Yeah, I've talked about how there was spotty distribution, even among the 7-Elevens in my area. New Jersey's a highly populated state, but the Hulk always showed up. Regarding this month's talk about the Royal Flush Gang being converted into superpowers figures, there was a whole conversation on the website about that. And then Paul Wildenberger chimes in with, I think another member would be better for the mail-in offer. If you bought Ace, King, Queen, and 10, then you would get the last member delivered straight to your door. Imagine the delight of all the children as they open their jack-in-the-box. No, please don't get up. I know my way out. Paul, I think maybe you should sit out next episode in terms of the comments and come back. Just do a little bit of a timeout. The administrator says, Rob, Denny simply hated Aquaman and probably kept his name obscured as he had to finally write stories about him. Remember this way back when? And then the administrator brings up a link to my long-gone JLA satellite blog where I talk about issue 86. And this is him, the administrator, quoting me back to myself. Roll call. Superman, Batman, Aquaman, Flash, Adam, Hawkman. Notable moments. Of course, it's great to have Aquaman back. In Michael Urie's super fun JLA Companion Book, Volume 1, he asked Friedrich, meaning Mike Friedrich, why Aquaman was back after being out entirely during O'Neill's run. No big mystery. Friedrich just figured, hey, he's a member. Why not use him? This Aquafan thanks you, Mike. It's always weird seeing old blog posts resurfacing. It's like, I kind of remember writing that, but sort of nods. It's like, who wrote that? Dr. Ann says, another great episode. I can recall seeing this cover in the past and wondering what the story behind it was. Now I know. I know of at least three people, if not more, who look so much like Supergirl in the Silver Age that it fooled people closest to her, knowing there is an evil Xana Jana out there isn't too mind-numbing. Perhaps the thing that I was tickled at the most was the panel of Superman patching up the wall. Hilarious. As we're chucking the pyramid back to Exor, isn't there a chance it will just burn up in the atmosphere or land in a crowded city? The Superman super intelligence so wild it couldn't calculate all that stuff? All good questions, Ange. Steve Givens says, finished listening to this episode this morning and I just now looked through the gallery as my students are working on a group assignment. Yes, I am that teacher. But I hope you appreciate, Rob, that I'm willing to neglect the education of my students to write a comment on one of your podcast episodes. Ha! Of course, I could find a way to incorporate For All Mankind into a lesson of some sort. Don't think I can't do it, because I can and I will. Anyway, Jeremiah is right about the action poses of the Super Friends in the subscription ad. With the exception of the smiles on their faces, they look as though they are barreling down on Xana Jana, ready to knock their blocks off. Overall, another great episode. Thanks. Brian Linton says, thanks for another fun episode. I agree that while it was nice for Aquaman to get the spotlight this issue, it would have been nice if they wouldn't have had to beat him down so hard to do so. Also, I have to add that print subscriptions are still a thing. While my daughter and I get most of our comics digitally, we do get each one book as a print subscription. This is in part because we don't really have a local comic store and because also my daughter likes to get things in the mail. I look forward to the next episode. Thank you so much, Brian. That's great information. Chris Franken, of course, from our network, says, hey, as Mobius Aquaman was, it could be worse. Then he could have had him jump into a disintegration pit. I remember that Hal said, if you took the Wonder Twins out, put the Super Friends logo in the middle, that would make a great poster or t-shirt. And then Sean Myers jumps in, or a clock, which is a nice touch. Was there ever a Super Friends clock? I don't recall ever seeing it. I think I would have had it if there had been one. I had a Batman clock with Batman and Robin for many years, but the Super Friends clock would have been cool. Doug Vandiver says, yes, I'm as impressed with anyone at the Murder Twins having very nearly bumped off the most powerful forces of good ever assembled. This puts them in the Legion of Doom level villainy, and that's quite a feat, especially considering they don't have powers. But can we talk about the amazing work they did carving the bas-relief stone self-portraits on the pyramid exterior? Now that's talent. Just wanted to let that artistic achievement have a moment of recognition. Thank you, Doug. Paul Wildenberger returns to say, until you listen to this episode, I would have sworn I'd never read it before. When you mentioned the plot point of duplicate Exorians being born every few thousand years, that clicked in my memory. I pulled up the issue on the DC Infinite app and discovered some of the images did ring a bell. The one that seemed most familiar was from page 16, Aquaman ordering the eels to overlord the circuits. It has been 42 years since this issue came out, and I'm sure at least 40 of them have gone by since I read this issue. Funny how memory works. And then finally, Jody Yurden says, great to hear Jeremiah on the show. I'm a big fan of his work. I can tell you as a rural mail carrier that select Marvel and DC titles are still available via subscription, albeit I believe they're distributed via Midtown Comics. One of my customers has several DC comic subscriptions, and while I don't think I'd be sending them to be slabbed via CGC anytime soon, they do arrive in much better condition than you would expect. While the plastic bag and cardboard backer that they are mailed in isn't comic shop quality, they certainly arrive in better condition than my Detective and X-Men subscriptions did in the 90s. I have a lot of fondness for these books and have enjoyed sharing them with my sons. Thanks for another great episode. Thank you, Jody, and thank you for the info. That's great. Between you and Brian, we do firmly now know that they do Marvel subscriptions. That's very interesting that they're distributed via Midtown Comics. That's kind of a, I mean, I know that that's Legendary Comic Book Store. I've been there a bunch of times. DC isn't in New York anymore, so it's kind of interesting to me. They maybe still have that relationship, but that's great. I'm very charmed that they still do. Part of me wants to do that just to get a comic in the mail just for the vintage kick of it. So thank you for the information. So thanks everybody for the comments. I really appreciate it. Big thanks to Tim Price for stopping by and stopping by the Hall of Justice and talking this issue of Super Friends with me. Of course, you can find back episodes of For All Mankind on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. We're always talking Super Friends over on Twitter at For All Mankind SF. And finally, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Chuck Dill, Stanford M. Brown, Gord Tolton, and David S. Gutierrez for their support. Very much appreciate it, guys. Big thanks to all of my guests who stopped by this year to talk Super Friends with me. I had a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to continuing on with the comic and the show next year. So I guess that's going to do it. Have a happy holidays, everybody. Have a happy and safe new year, and we will see you in January. For now, though, thanks for listening to For All Mankind. You can join us next episode, next year, when we look at Super Friends number 26, The Wonder Twins Battle of Wits.
An FWTV podcast.